heart broken, sad, despondent, devastated, destroyed. Like, my whole life had just walked out the door.
Fifty-five-year-old Michelle Boat was floored when her husband Nicholas left her for another woman in early 2020. Sadly, Nicholas's new girlfriend was brutally stabbed to death a few months later. Michelle admitted to being heartbroken, despondent, and downright devastated by the betrayal, but she denied having anything to do with the murder. That said, investigators and prosecutors didn't buy her story. In fact, they described her as a woman scorned who would do anything she could to get her husband back and put an end to the affair once and for all. Before we begin, we would like to express our sincerest condolences to the victim's family in this tragic case. Michelle and Nicholas got married on Saturday, January the 1st of 2000. Michelle got pregnant shortly thereafter, and they eventually had a son, Andrew, and a daughter, Emma. The Boats enjoyed a comfortable middle-class lifestyle in rural Pella, Iowa, about 45 miles or 70 kilometers southeast of Des Moines. By the spring of 2020, they had been married for more than two decades, but at that point, their relationship was more strained than it had ever been before. The sad truth was, their marriage had been falling apart for years, and their once happy home on Prairie Street was consumed by a palpable tension. Even so, Michelle still loved Nicholas, but sadly, the feeling wasn't mutual. Then, in early March of 2020, he met a woman named Tracy Mondeval on Facebook. Nicholas and Tracy had an instant connection, and they were even more attracted to one another when they met for the first time. Tracy was a spunky, positive, and lighthearted woman, just what Nicholas was looking for after being trapped in a dying marriage for so many years. He and Tracy immediately became a couple, and by the end of the month, things were so serious that he left Michelle. She knew her marriage was falling apart, but she was shocked and devastated when she came home from work one day and discovered that Nicholas and most of his possessions were gone. Later, she said it was like her whole life had just walked out the door. In addition, the timing couldn't have been worse because the country was in the grips of the COVID-19 pandemic. It was a time of fear, chaos, and uncertainty, unlike anything anyone had ever experienced. And now Michelle was all alone while the man she loved was in a steamy new relationship with a younger woman. Needless to say, she was rocked by feelings of intense loneliness, depression, and abandonment. She often turned to alcohol to deal with the unbearable pain, and when the initial shock wore off, she became obsessed with getting her husband back and finding out who the other woman was. On Friday, March the 20th of 2020, Tracy Mondeval called the Ottumwa Police Department to report that Michelle had followed her from Pella to Ottumwa, more than 40 miles or 64 kilometers to the southeast. Tracy was so shaken by the incident that she asked the dispatcher to send an officer to meet her at a local gas station. Shortly thereafter, Michelle sent Tracy several text messages. In one, she told her to tell Nicholas to come home where he belonged. In another, she wrote, "You'll be seeing my face in your dreams very soon because I'll be there when you open your eyes in the morning and when you close them at night." Later, Nicholas called the police to report that Tracy was following them, and on one occasion, she had even assaulted him. Nicholas eventually got a non-contact order against Michelle, but she repeatedly violated it. In May of 2020, Michelle was admitted to a local hospital to undergo psychiatric evaluation and treatment. She stayed at the facility for nearly a week, but by Monday, May the 18th, she was in what can only be described as a frantic state of mind. No matter how hard she tried, she just couldn't get Nicholas and his 46-year-old girlfriend Tracy out of her head. Michelle was determined to get Nicholas back, but first she needed to find out where he and Tracy were living first. That afternoon, she drove around town looking for Nicholas, and she eventually found his maroon Ford F-150 pickup truck parked at a local laundromat. Michelle eased her Cadillac into the parking space that gave her a clear view inside. But to her surprise, Nicholas wasn't there. Instead, she saw Tracy doing their laundry. This was almost too much to bear because she was doing her husband's laundry and driving his truck. Michelle considered going inside and confronting her, but she decided to lay low and follow her to see where she went when she left. Tracy stopped at Burger King after leaving the laundromat, and from there she drove to the Vermeer Corporation where Nicholas worked. By then, Michelle's emotions were all over the place, and to make matters worse, Tracy was now taking her husband food at work. Shortly after pulling into the parking lot, Nicholas came out the front door to get in the pickup with Tracy. Their relationship was still fresh and new, and they saw each other whenever they could, no matter how little time they may have. They had no idea Michelle was watching them as she saw Nicholas kiss Tracy goodbye before he went back inside about 20 minutes later. Shortly thereafter, at 8:10 p.m., a surveillance camera captured Michelle following Tracy towards her apartment. Minutes later, they both pulled into the parking lot at the Glenwood apartment complex. At that moment, Michelle decided to confront the woman who had taken everything from her. But before getting out of the car, she put on a pair of latex gloves. She began walking towards Tracy, who was still inside Nicholas's F-150. We'll never know what, if anything, Michelle said or whether she approached in a threatening or confrontational manner. Whatever the case, she reached down, grabbing the handle and yanking the door open. According to Michelle's version of events, Tracy called her a crazy bitch and began striking her. However, Tracy's seatbelt was still fastened, so her hips and torso were essentially pinned to the seat. Michelle said that she put her hands over her head to show Tracy that she didn't want to fight. However, she said Tracy's verbal and physical assaults were so ferocious that she snapped and ran back to her Cadillac to get a knife out of the glove box. Unfortunately, Tracy was still in the pickup truck when she got back. Now, Tracy was on the defensive. She managed to block some of the knife blows with her hands and forearms, but one was so powerful that it penetrated her chest and pierced her heart. A few of Tracy's neighbors heard the commotion and looked out into the parking lot to see what was going on. One eventually called 911 to report a domestic disturbance in progress.
Like, my heart's beating when I saw how much blood was on her face.
Do you have any idea what apartment she might have went in?
No. She looks like she just got in the car and left. But the vehicle that they were in and running in, where you're going to get blood, is going to be in the Navy.
Rising a six-plex.
Well, it's not my house, though.
Is a male and female in a scuffle. It's, I think female is completely blood.
And face. And so in the back, in our driveway.
Okay.
My heart's racing. This person has a maroon-colored truck, and I don't know what they were fighting over. There was, the horn was honking, and I was trying to mind my own business till I saw her.
Is the maroon truck still there?
The maroon truck is still there, but the other vehicle was like a four-door, or looked like a Cadillac almost, and it looks like that woman got in the car and left, but.
Female may have left in possibly a Cadillac. She's advising a maroon truck is still in the back.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been the male, huh?
That's the vehicle that the female was in when I thought it was just, I don't know. I didn't think it was anything until I just want this place cleaned up around here.
Sure. But you don't hear any yelling or anything right now?
Well, I came in to call you guys. I'm not going to stand out there not knowing the situation. I can go out there.
When the attack was over, Michelle knew that Tracy was seriously hurt. Nonetheless, she ran back to her car, wiped the blood off her face, and drove off without seeking any assistance of any kind. Tracy was unconscious, covered in blood, and slumped over in the Ford F-150 when officers from the Pella Police Department arrived at 8:21 p.m. She had multiple stab wounds to her chest and defensive wounds on her hands and arms. She was pronounced dead a few minutes later. Witnesses told police that the assailant had fled in a four-door Cadillac, and somebody even got the license plate number. The Cadillac was parked in the driveway when officers arrived at Michelle's house on Prairie Street later that night. They immediately noticed the blood on the driver's side door, and one officer touched the brakes to see if they were still warm. Inside, Michelle was taking a shower when she heard a loud knocking. She finished up as quickly as she could, cleaned off the knife and hid it in a cabinet underneath the sink, and went to greet the officers in a robe with a bath towel wrapped around her head. While searching the home, they found one outfit in the washing machine and a pair of blue latex gloves in the water tank behind the toilet. And later, investigators found a calendar in which Michelle had marked off each day that her husband had been gone. At the police station that night, she told investigators that Nicholas threw her away like trash. She knew the police already had tons of evidence against her, but she said she didn't kill Tracy and that she hadn't seen her in months. Nonetheless, investigators did not buy her story, and she was arrested and charged with first-degree murder the following morning. 2 days after Tracy's horrific death, Nicholas made the following social media post. Later, DNA results confirmed that the blood samples taken from Michelle's Cadillac matched Tracy Montabaugh's blood. Michelle's murder trial began in mid-May of 2021, more than a year after the altercation had led to Tracy Montabaugh's death. Many thought the state would offer the defense a plea deal at the last minute, but this was not the case.
Mr. Bull, is the state making any plea offer to Miss Bowe?
No, Your Honor.
The atmosphere was tense as the jury of 6 men and 8 women took their seats in the Marion County Courthouse on the morning of Thursday, May the 6th, 2021. But unlike most courtrooms in other jurisdictions, there was no room for visitors, members of the press, or even the victim's family and friends. Michelle had trouble controlling her emotions from the very beginning, even when the judge was taking care of the mundane business like reading jury instructions. When it came time for opening statements, Marion County Attorney Ed Bull began by telling jurors that Michelle was scorned, obsessed, and seething when her husband left her for Tracy Montabaugh. He also said that she was determined to confront Tracy, that she stalked and hunted her, and that her actions alone were responsible for her tragic death. As Michelle looked on, Attorney Bull told the jury that Nicholas Boat had moved on with his life, but that the defendant just couldn't come to grips with the fact that their marriage was over. He then described how Michelle put on rubber gloves and confronted Tracy in the alley behind her apartment and delivered the fatal knife wound to her heart as she sat in Nicholas's F-150 truck. Attorneys on both sides knew the rubber gloves would play a pivotal role in the trial. According to the prosecution, the gloves were in the car because Michelle knew she needed to hide her fingerprints when confronting Tracy. On the other hand, the defense claimed that they were in the car because she used them when handling dirty laundry at the hospital where she worked.
For Tracy, the drive home isn't all that far, just a few minutes. So it's not long before Tracy pulls in to her driveway and turns off her truck. But before Tracy can undo her seatbelt, this defendant is on her. Being scorned, obsessed, and seething has led to this moment. The defendant is armed with a knife and is wearing latex gloves. She stabs at Tracy. Tracy tries to fight back, pulling the defendant's hair and trying to defend herself. But she's unarmed. She's unaware the attack was coming, and she was restrained by a seatbelt. In the end, Tracy Montabaugh never stood a chance. We'll see that Tracy has defensive wounds to her hands, but despite her efforts, one of the stab wounds slices into and stops Tracy's heart. So police will find no blood evidence on the defendant, or on the clothing for that matter. And I want to be clear, law enforcement never found what it is the defendant did with the knife after she stabbed Tracy.
In her opening statement, defense attorney Jill Emmerman told the court that there wouldn't be any Perry Mason moments during the trial like there were on TV and in legal thrillers. She described this case as a real-life tragedy.
On May 18th, 2020, Tracy Montabaugh was stabbed. One of those stabs, ladies and gentlemen, was right around here. And it's that stab that nicked her heart and killed her. Now, I told you yesterday that there would be no big Perry Mason moment in this trial. We don't have a lot of those in real life. Unlike in the TV show, there aren't typically any big dramatic reveals or unexpected twists. The kind of thing that we as viewers come to expect, and we want that, and we wait for it, and sure enough, in the end, we're rewarded. But the thing is, in here, this isn't a movie. It's not TV. What's happening in here is a real life tragedy.
Then she surprised the jury by telling them that it wasn't even a whodunit because her client stabbed Tracy Mondebaugh and the police got the right person.
But I'm going to tell you right now, standing right here, before you have heard any evidence in this case, I will stand here and I will tell you that Michelle Beaux is responsible. Michelle Beaux is the one who had the knife on May 18th. And Michelle Beaux is the one that stabbed her. Now, the only thing even remotely Perry Mason-like about that, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that I'm standing here right now, 20 minutes into this trial, and I'm telling you that. But it's important that you know this isn't a whodunit. It's not a whodunit. The police got the right person.
That said, Miss Emmerman painted a vivid picture of Michelle's emotional state between when Nicholas left her and Tracy's death. Instead of the scorned, seething, and vengeful woman that the prosecution had portrayed her as, she said Michelle was devastated and heartbroken because she couldn't accept that her beloved husband left and their 20-year marriage was over. Miss Emmerman also reminded members of the jury that the state bore the burden of proof and that Michelle should have been charged with voluntary manslaughter instead of premeditated murder because she never intended to kill Tracy. Voluntary manslaughter is when one person causes the death of another in a passionate, violent, and irresistible fit of rage after serious provocation. As such, prosecutors would have to prove that Michelle acted with intent to get a first-degree murder conviction.
Michelle's lawyer is already standing in front of us, telling us that she did it. So the answer that you'll have to come up with in this case isn't who did it, but it's what she did. It's what happened on May 18th, 2020. What it is. Now the state says that what she did was first-degree murder. That's the charge that the state has brought. That's the charge that Mr. Bull stood in front of you just a little bit ago and read out loud. Murder in the first degree. We talked a long time yesterday about how it is the state's burden to prove, if it can, the charge that they've made against Michelle. And it is the state's burden alone. We have nothing to prove to you. It is the state's burden. It is an extraordinarily high burden. It is the highest burden that we have in our system. And in order to meet that extraordinarily high burden, the state is going to have to rule out all logical possibilities of reasonable doubt.
In Iowa, first-degree murder carries a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole, whereas the maximum penalty for voluntary manslaughter is 10 years. Needless to say, this was a huge point of contention between the prosecution and defense. As the trial progressed, witness Dan Rumberg described the altercation and told the jurors that he heard someone shout, "He don't belong to you."
The statement sounded as they were saying, "He doesn't belong to you, he's mine." he's mine, he doesn't belong to you, several times. That was the most I could make of anything.
Mr. Brumberg, what did you do next?
I turned around and went back inside, deciding that I did not want to get involved in two girls' fight over whatever the fight was about.
Next, another eyewitness testified to seeing two people fighting in the alley beside the apartment building.
Could you please describe to the jury in further detail what you saw and heard?
I heard a horn honk, and I could see two people, one person in the driver's seat of the truck and another person on the outside of the driver's door of the truck fighting. The person on the outside of the truck, I could see their, what I thought was punches, punching into the truck, and I could see the person that was in the driver's seat of the truck's upper torso coming over into the passenger seat of the truck, and it went back and forth. So every time there was like a punch, or I could see the upper torso coming over to the passenger side of the truck and then coming back up and then back down, up and down.
Later, an investigator described the blue latex left at the scene, as well as the blood found on the steering wheel, driver's side door, window, and door frame of Nicholas's truck.
I'm first going to display for you and others what's been marked and admitted as State's Exhibit Number 19. Do you recognize this photo?
Yes.
And just generally, what is it?
This is the truck that was parked in front of apartment number 4.
All right. Now, I know you did a lot of things there, but I want to focus your attention on some specific things. So I will put up for you and everyone State's Exhibit Number 20. What's significant, if anything, with respect to the items shown in this photograph?
In this photograph, you can see a piece of you can't really tell what it is on this one, the piece of blue that is a finger from a disposable glove.
All right. And I'm going to use the pointer. Are you referring to this item here?
Yes.
And just for the record, I've circled a blue item between the tire and the post ahead of the driver's door. What are we seeing here in exhibit number 21?
So like I said, after we take initial photographs, we put down placards. So this was labeled as placard number 1, and it's a closer up view of the finger of that disposable glove.
All right. Was that item collected by you?
Yes.
Another key moment in the trial came when prosecutors played the jury a voicemail Michelle left on her estranged husband's phone shortly before Tracy's death. In an eerie voice, Michelle said, "She's messed with the wrong mama." When he took the stand, Nicholas Boat was articulate and surprisingly unemotional. He said that he met Tracy on Facebook, that they had moved in together shortly thereafter, and that they ate dinner together in his pickup truck on the night that she was killed. Michelle broke down near the end of his testimony when he described kissing Tracy goodbye before walking back to work.
At some point in the beginning of March, did you and Michelle separate?
Yes.
Did you remain in the home after your separation?
No, I left.
As part of your marital property, did you and Michelle own any vehicles?
We owned two vehicles. One was a 2004 four-door Cadillac Silver, and one F-150 2006 four-door maroon pickup.
After your separation, was there a particular vehicle you drove and a particular vehicle that Michelle drove?
Michelle drove the 2004 Cadillac, and I drove the 2006 F-150.
Mr. Boat, did you know Tracy Mondebaugh?
Yes.
How did you meet Tracy?
We met on Facebook.
Was this a special occasion, or is this something that you would typically do?
It was typically what we did. She would come and bring me lunch.
Any particular reason?
So we could spend time together.
What did you do after you left Tracy?
I kissed her goodbye, and as I was walking back into the building, I waved to her and then went back into work.
Is that the last time that you saw Tracy Mondebaugh alive?
Yes.
Defendants rarely take the stand in cases like Michelle's because their testimony often does more harm than good. Even so, she and her attorneys decided that she would testify on her own behalf. She broke down multiple times when describing how she found out Nicholas left her after coming home from a hospital shift one afternoon about 9 weeks before the attack.
What do you remember about that day?
I went to work that day. I'm due into work at 6:30 in the morning. Until 3:15.
And you got off work at 3:15?
Yes, ma'am.
What did you do then?
I went home and I realized that he was gone.
Do you remember what day that was?
I believe it was March 12th.
How did you feel when you realized on March 12th that Nick had left?
Heartbroken, sad, despondent, devastated, destroyed, like my whole life had just walked out the door. There weren't gonna be any more Thanksgivings or Christmases without him. He was my whole life.
Now, when Nick left on March 12th, did you know that he was leaving you for a specific woman?
He said he was, yes.
Later, Michelle testified that she only followed Tracy because she wanted to tell her to stop seeing Nicholas. Contrary to what the prosecution had claimed, she insisted that she never stalked or hunted Tracy and that she only decided to follow her after seeing Nicholas's pickup truck at the laundromat. That said, she also admitted that she snapped, got the knife from her Cadillac, went back to the F-150, and stabbed Tracy Mondebaugh repeatedly. Michelle described the altercation to the best of her ability during their cross-examination. She said she couldn't recall every detail because her eyes were closed for much of the attack, but she admitted knowing that Tracy was badly hurt. At this point, the prosecution reminded the jury that she did not call 911 or try to find help. Instead, she wiped the blood off her face, fled the scene, drove back home, took a shower, washed her clothes, and hid the murder weapon.
I don't know. My eyes were closed. I don't know what I was stabbing. She had her hand in my face.
And you scratched her face.
Yes.
And you sliced her right thumb.
I don't know. It was a struggle. We were having a tussle, a struggle, a fight, a...
And then you chose to stab her, right?
Yes, I snapped.
And then I
stabbed her, yes.
And then you stepped back, right?
No.
You picked up your glasses at that point?
No.
Well, didn't you tell us on direct you picked up your glasses?
Yes.
And you just said it, you didn't pick them up before you stabbed her. So when did you pick them up?
I dumped her purse everywhere first.
And then you picked up?
Because she had cigarettes in her purse. And I wanted to see if she was the one smoking in there. I was out of my head. I was freaked out by all this.
Just... Once you were done stabbing her, you stepped away from the truck, didn't you?
Yes.
And at that moment, you knew Tracy was hurt badly, didn't you?
I didn't know.
I'm sorry, I thought you said on direct examination that the reason why you didn't tell the police the truth was because you realized how hurt Tracy was.
Yes.
So you knew Tracy was hurt very bad.
Yes.
So you called 911.
No.
You called out for someone to get her help.
No.
You wiped the blood off your face and you got back into your car and left, right?
I got back in my car and left, yes.
After you wiped the blood off your face, right?
I just pushed my hair back.
And then you drove home.
Yes.
And then you quickly took your clothes off, right?
I was in a panic, yes, because I knew I was in trouble.
You're in such
and a... I didn't know what to do.
Well,
I never been through anything like that in my life. I just...
And then the police tell you Tracy has been hurt seriously, right?
Yes, yes.
The state called just 11 witnesses during the surprisingly short trial. As is often the case, closing arguments were little more than summaries of the evidence that had already been presented. However, defense attorney Trevor Anderson told jurors that he didn't want them to sympathize with Michelle Boat or to show her any mercy because she didn't deserve it. Instead, he asked them to consider why she did what she did and to find her guilty of the lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter because it was the charge that most aligned with the facts of the case. At that point, nobody had any idea what was going through the jurors' minds or how long it would take for them to consider the facts and circumstances of the case and then to render a verdict. By the end, they needed just 45 minutes to do just that. Shortly after re-entering the courtroom, the judge revealed that they had unanimously found Michelle Boat guilty of first-degree murder.
In the matter of the State of Iowa versus Michelle Lee Boat, we, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree, verdict form number one.
Michelle's lawyers may appeal the decision, but as it stands now, Michelle will spend the rest of her life in state prison without the possibility of parole.